Good morning.
Good morning.
A few announcements before we begin this morning. We're now past our January 31st goal date for receiving pledges for the capital campaign. We have received great responses from almost half of our membership with over $300,000 in pledges. The January 31st goal date was for submitting your pledge card, which is the promise of the planned giving amount, with payments due May 1st, 2018, 2019, or 2020. Having pledges in hand allows us to proceed with signing a contract and obtaining the necessary permits so construction on the exterior and replacing the heating unit can begin this spring. If you have not already done so, please submit your pledge as soon as possible. Thank you so much for your generosity. Today's offering will be given to the Oconomowoc Food Pantry. Any loose coins or checks can be made to the Oconomowoc Food Pantry today. Our pulpit guest is Reverend Scott Prinster. Scott is finishing his dissertation on the history of science and religion in America. He's very ready to be done. He served UU congregation in both Michigan and in Madison, and he lives in Madison. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is an UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people regardless of whom they love or how they present gender. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you have brought with you today as we begin our service. Thank you. At this hour, in small towns and big cities, in single rooms and ornate sanctuaries, many of our sister Unitarian Universalist congregations are also lighting a flaming chalice. As we light our chalice today, let us remember that we are part of a great community of faith. May this dancing flame inspire us to fill our lives with the Unitarian Universalist ideals of love, justice, and truth. Please rise in body and spirit in joining our opening hymn, number 18 in the gray hymnal, What Wondrous Love This Is.
Good morning. It is lovely to see you all again. Our opening words from the Reverend Maureen Killoran, who writes, "In these hard times, let us look first to the response of love. In the midst of challenge, may our chalice flame bear witness to the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. In the midst of uncertainty, may our chalice be a beacon of encouragement, that our values may guide our choices. Let us look first to the response of love." And this is a time when we traditionally rise and greet each other on this snowy day, the stalwarts who are able to make it here. And in light of the really awful flu epidemic, I like to encourage you to consider sharing a namaste with your neighbors, which says, "The divine in me recognizes and greets the divine in you." I invite you to rise and greet your neighbors this morning.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Claire Johnson, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Love makes a house a home. Many of us consider this space as a second home, a place where we feel happy, safe, and loved. Whether you are with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad that you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration. We do our best to help our children learn to give generously and with an open heart. And one of the ways we do this is by collecting non-perishable food items each week for the local food pantries. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward to you, for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. In this church month, we are going to be talking and thinking about love. Here is a story about love. It may make you think of the people you love and the people who love you. Today's story is called "I Love You to the Moon and Back," illustrated by Tim Warnes. I love our time together as we start each happy day. I love our bath time silliness, the way we splash and play. I love to lift you way up high so you feel so tall. We'll climb the highest mountaintops. Hold tight and you won't fall. I love to share the magic of the shining skies above. And think of all the different ways that we can show our love. Like when we're touching noses, or playing chase, or seeing friends. Our love is always with us, and it never, ever ends. So snuggle safely in my arms. Our day is nearly done. I love you to the moon and stars, my precious little one. And that is my story today. Can I have our lantern bearer? May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Please help in joining and singing the children to their classrooms. The song is "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in your order of service. This piece of the service celebrates the generosity of spirit which makes our community possible. Just now we are asking for a special display of that spirit for the well-being of our home, our building. Karen has a few words about our capital campaign.
Hi, I'm Karen Haskell. I'm the president of the board this year, a position I never even considered in a million years, but there was a need, and I'm happy to be doing it. It's going well. So Al and I were founding members here, and so that was, 20 years ago? We raised our girls here, and they are now in their 20s, and I'm so happy that after they left here in college, they both found their own spiritual paths and keep searching and on them. One is a Unitarian up in Appleton, and the other is attends a non-denominational small Christian church, and they both have beautiful paths that they're on, so that's great. So over the years, I have been on a number of committees, the longest standing ones, the facilities committee before we bought the church. So for years, I was looking for a space for us. And then, of course, music. I did for many years. I was a musician, and then I was the choir director for 13 years. So when the capital campaign came up, I knew that we were going to be looking at, you know, the things that we really needed, the furnace and the siding. And when they talked about, you know, the other kind of upgrades, at first I was thought, my frugal self was like, oh, geez, we don't need to spend all that money. But then I thought about when I walk in this space that we've done so much work to, how it brings me joy. And I feel good and positive walking in here. And so then I looked at the other things that they had presented doing, and boy, it would be great to be able to pull up to the front of our church and have a really welcoming front entryway and to walk in and feel actually positive about it rather than sort of neutral. And then, you know, the windows in every classroom, I think, is awesome for our kids. So Al and I have made our pledge, and happily so. And many of you have made your pledges, and I thank you for that. We hope to, as she said in the beginning, they're in the process of getting bids now. And so those bids, so we need to have people turn in their pledges because we need to be able to work with the contractors. If we kind of miss the window of opportunity and we don't get everything until quite a bit later, then the contractors will be busy in the summer, and then we'll have to have things rebid again. So so please pledge. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. We pass these baskets each week to acknowledge and celebrate the reciprocal nature of our relationship to this community. Just as we need it, it needs us. Whether you put in a quarter, a dollar, or your pledge, it's giving and receiving that we celebrate. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. As a community of human hands and human hearts, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud, and the worship associate lights candles for us. In this case, Scott's going to do it. If you would like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is John. I have a joy and a concern, a joy that Scott is, Brinster is back in our pulpit after I think a long absence, or I missed your other times here. It's always a pleasure having you here. And a candle of concern for our member, Rob Sewer, and his family, as Rob just lost his brother last week after a long illness, and it's got to be really hard.
This is Jerry. Please light a candle for a nearly lifelong friend of mine, whom I mentioned a month or so ago that she was gravely ill. Well, she passed away this past week. But the real candle is for her husband, who has health problems of his own, and their two disabled sons, how they're going to be able to get by.
Good morning. Please light a candle of joy. This morning, my cousin, who lives in Munich in Germany, and she's 10 years older than I am, that means she's almost 90, called me, and we spoke for the first time in a long time for a whole hour. She's getting very forgetful. But it was such a joy, and thanks.
Hi, this is Mike. Candle of joy for friends of my daughters who the young men went to Junior Nationals curling event yesterday. They fell just short of winning the championship, which, and if they would have won, would have gone to Worlds. But it's impressive that these young men that I knew as children and started curling with my daughter a number of years ago are now vying for national championships.
This is Greg. I have a joy and a concern. My joy is that in 2 weeks we have our annual Of the People, By the People, For the People service. For those who aren't familiar with that one, that's one where we do all the work. So volunteers from the pews sing songs, read poems that they've written or that they're our favorites. So that's the good news. The bad news is I could still use a few more volunteers. So if you are secretly a poet who's written something about a relevant topic, the theme for this month, as you all know, is love. But it doesn't have to be about love. That would be great. So if there's any musicians who are still dying to take their turn, thank you, Karen. Okay, I'll make my pledge then. Especially could use some readings or poet if you even want to lead a sing-along. That would be fun for everybody. I'll see some of you in 2 weeks, and that means I have to prepare the service and practice. And Paul's going to help. Thank you, Paul. I'm grateful for Paul.
This is Mary, Candle of Joy. Snow!
this is Rick. Last week, we visited three different Unitarian churches in Georgia and Savannah, Charleston, South Carolina. That church was started in 1772, and we got a nice tour of it. They have earthquakes and hurricanes, so this little bit of snow is nothing for us.
This is Al, Candle of Hope, and thanks. Our social action group has been so active and has brought forth education for us, increasing awareness, and recently had a great presentation at Kettle Moraine High School. Awareness increases of white privilege, and the challenge for many that aren't willing to think a little bit deeper of truly how easy it is for some and not easy for others.
We light the last candle for those joys and sorrows we hold deeply, but we have not named here today.
There's a house on my block that's abandoned and cold. Folks moved out of it a long time ago, and they took all their things and they never came back. Looks like it's haunted with the windows all cracked, and everyone calls it the house, the house where nobody lives. Well, the paint was all cracked, it was peeled off of the wood. Papers were stacked on the porch where I stood, and the weeds had grown up just as high as the door. There were birds in the chimney and an old chest of drawers. Looks like no one will ever come back to the house where nobody lives. Once it held laughter, once it held dreams. Did they throw it away? Did they know what it means? Did someone's heart break? Or did someone do somebody wrong? So if you find someone, someone to have, someone to hold, don't trade it for silver, don't trade it for gold. I have all of life's treasures, and they are fine and they are good. They remind me that houses are just made of wood. Don't want anyone to call this the house where nobody lives. Once it held laughter, once it held dreams. Did they throw it away? Grand ain't the roof or the doors. If there's love in a house, it's a palace for sure. Without love, it ain't nothing but a house where nobody lives. Without love, it ain't nothing but a house where nobody lives. Nobody lives. Nobody.
Our first reading is a litany of wholeheartedness. Please join me in saying the refrain, "We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are." Because there have been times when shame has crushed our ability to be wholehearted, we let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Because we have not always had the courage to be imperfect, we let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Because we have struggled to have compassion for ourselves or others, we let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Because we have been afraid of our own vulnerability, we let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. because we are sometimes too scared to live authentically. We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Because we want to be wholehearted people, confident in our worthiness and our belonging. We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Here ends the first reading.
We are people with very full plates. We do many things and we care about many things. And sometimes it is hard to focus on what matters most to us. So I invite you now to simply set aside everything that is a preoccupation for you, that distracts you from being fully here, the regrets that pull you down, the worries that send your attention elsewhere, for a moment of meditation and reflection and prayer. I invite you to make yourselves comfortable in your seats. Let your body relax. Let your breath flow through you. Breathing and relaxing, we feel the web of life holding us. Breathing and relaxing, we feel the many lines of force and action intersecting within us. Surrounded by other seekers and all creation, breathing and relaxing, we are fully at home in ourselves. Breathing and relaxing, we are at peace with our place in this world. Breathing and relaxing, I invite you now into a time of silence. Spirit of life and love, whom we know by many names, we give thanks for the beauty and the power of nature around us. We give thanks for the beauty and power of those sitting beside us this morning. We give thanks for all the things that bring meaning and joy and safety and respect to our lives. And we pause in gratitude, thankful for this time and place where we can hold up that which matters most to us. Blessed be, and amen. Our second reading is from a series of meditation manuals that have been released by the Unitarian Universalist Association over the years. They've been an excellent resource for those of us learning how to be spiritual. This one, I think, was published in 1989, perhaps, and I was a newly graduated college student, a fervent atheist, which I would tell you in great emphasis, who was learning how to be spiritual, learning how to care about things that mattered, and learning how to put that caring into words. This has remained one of my very favorite poems from this entire series of meditation manuals. And as you'll hear in the sermon, I've used it regularly. This is Fault Line by the Reverend Robert Walsh. Did you ever think there might be a fault line passing underneath your living room? A place in which your life is lived in meeting and in separating, wondering and telling, unaware that just beneath you is the unseen seam of great plates that strain through time. And that your life, already spilling over the brim, could be invaded, sent off in a new direction, turned aside by forces you were warned about but not prepared for. Shelves could be spilled out, the level floor set at an angle, in some seconds shaking. You would have to take your losses, do whatever must be done next. When the great plates slip and the earth shivers and the flaw is seen to lie in what you trusted most, look not to more solidity, to weighty slabs of concrete poured, or strength of cantilevered beam to save the fractured order. Trust more the tensile strands of love that bend and stretch to hold you in the web of life that's often torn, but always healing. There's your strength. The shifting plates, the restive earth, your room, your precious life, they all proceed from love, the ground on which we walk together. Now I invite you to open your gray hymn books to our second hymn, number 83, and we'll sing it seated, Winds Be Still. Thank you. In my former career as a scientist, I often worked with idealized models of the world, with all of its messiness simplified so that we could make better sense of it. On the other hand, as a minister, I find that my priority has been to help people deal with the world as it exists. Or as Don Cooley expresses it in our first reading, letting go of what ought to be and addressing what actually is. This is especially urgent as we embark together on a month of services on the topic of love, that we acknowledge where we are and not just be distracted by where we wish we were. In our congregations and other communities, I meet so many people who are distracted, overcommitted, flooded with adrenaline for too much of their day, and unable to take stock of what is most important in our lives. This is the reason for this spiritual community and others like it around the world, to help us lean on each other as we count the emotional cost of our absurd, destructive political system, the deep damage of racism and white supremacy, the daily new outrages of sexual harassment and assault. A lot of what we're going through as a society and as individuals has real repercussions for our ability to understand and experience love. I don't encourage us to look to the marketplace for wisdom about matters of the heart, however. Despite each store now having an entire aisle devoted to the upcoming Valentine's Day, among the pink and red cupids, the cheap chocolates, and the frilly cards, the message is overwhelmingly that we should seek someone who stirs up our hormones and satisfies our wants, a transaction of attraction between consumers. Diane Ackerman wrote in her book, A Natural History of Love, "Everyone admits that love is wonderful and necessary, yet no one can agree on what it is. We use the word love in such a sloppy way that it can mean almost nothing or absolutely everything." The brilliant feminist thinker Bell Hooks notes how difficult it is to grow into adulthood with a useful understanding of love, when we're exposed to so many distorted expressions of it in our childhood. Hooks remembers how she was raised with a confusing mix of messages. She would be praised and encouraged for being a smart girl, but later shamed for that same intelligence and told that her smartness was likely to drive her crazy, and she would probably be put in a mental institution where no one would visit her. She recalls, "I wanted to know love, but I was afraid to surrender and trust another person. I was afraid to be intimate. By choosing men who were not interested in being loving, I was able to practice giving love, but always within an unfulfilling context. Naturally, my need to receive love was not met. I got what I was accustomed to getting, care and affection, usually mingled with a degree of unkindness, neglect, or even cruelty. At times, I was unkind. It took me a long time to recognize that while I wanted to know love, I was afraid to be truly intimate." Hooks also remembers that she learned to think of love as a feeling and as something that happens to us. Out of all the dimensions that might go into creating a meaningful and satisfying expression of loving, we choose to invest in others who give us this feeling, a process known as cathexis. This creates the confusion in which we insist that we love someone even if they are regularly hurt or neglect us. And we persist in thinking that this unhealthy cathexis is love. One of the most useful tools I've encountered for untangling these attachments is the Buddhist concept of the near enemy and the far enemy. two ways to talk about opposites. The far enemy is the simpler of the two. It is the true opposite of a concept. The far enemy of kindness, for example, is cruelty. The near enemy is much sneakier and harder to identify because it can be confused for the original idea. A near enemy of compassion could be pity, which allows us to go on believing that we're still being compassionate. A near enemy of loving kindness might be conditional love, when we wish others well only when they do what we want. Not surprisingly, the near enemies of love are many: neediness, control, codependency, lust, loneliness. But I think that most of them boil down to some form of clinging attachment, which is why I find Buddhist thought so helpful in this conversation. One of the most important lessons I've encountered in my career as a minister is how this fearful clinging can distort our entire lives. Especially after September 11th, I've been so aware of how readily we'll sacrifice everything for even the illusion of security and stability. Our second reading this morning, Fault Line, by my late colleague Robbie Walsh, continues to be one of my most treasured resources whenever I feel anxiety steering us toward unhealthy choices. It was this poem that came to mind as I thought about my temptation to nail down the perfect definition of love for you this morning. It occurred to me that since we have a whole month to explore the topic of love, it might be smarter to start with a perspective that enriches the other 3 weeks as well. What I'd like to focus on this morning is a line at the end of Walsh's poem that caught my attention after having used it for so many years. "There's your strength," he wrote, "the shifting plates, the restive earth, your room, your precious life, they all proceed from love, the ground on which we walk together." They all proceed from love. Now, this is a very different use of the word love than when we speak of it as a feeling that magically strikes us, or the infatuation marketed in the Valentine's aisle, which is really love distorted by the forces of materialism and consumerism. What drew my attention to the possibility that love might be an expression of something greater than us was a series of conversations that our ministers held several years ago, shaping our movement to be less about the isolated individual and more about the connections and the covenants that join us to one another, shifting the focus of our spiritual journeys from who are we to whose are we. One beloved colleague of mine, the Reverend Vale Weller, whose words I always trust so deeply that they slip past my biases and my defensiveness, reflected on her covenants in a way that helps me to be able to say today, "Whose am I? I belong to those who came before me and shaped me, even if those relationships were troubled or even destructive. I belong to them. Whose am I? I belong to those who will come after me, who will inherit the mess I've left and the blessings I've left too, even if I don't want to feel responsible for people I will never know. I belong to them. Whose am I? I belong to my family and friends and colleagues and neighbors and to the natural world near and far, and I belong to the larger love that holds us all, a creative force that makes all of our gifts and blessings possible." This last idea of a larger love is something I'm especially indebted to Vail for. I heard her use it in a prayer several years ago, and it stuck in my mind like a fishhook, always clamoring for my deeper attention. Now, when I read Robbie Walsh's poem, I understand his last lines as being about the larger love, the foundation beneath us and within us all. This idea is what I'd most like to contribute to this month's reflections and conversations about love. Again, I'm avoiding the temptation to nail down some perfect and final description, partly because I think that this kind of precision is actually foreign to how the larger love moves in our lives. Another Buddhist concept that has been valuable for me describes our tendency to confuse the finger pointing toward the moon with the moon itself. The signpost merely points toward our destination, but we often mistake it for our actual goal. When I speak about the larger love, it's probably obvious that I don't mean the far enemies of love. It's clear that thoughts and acts of hatred are foreign and even hostile to this life-giving foundation. However, the American Jewish writer and winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, Elie Wiesel, also helps us rule out one of the sneakiest near enemies of love. In an interview in 1986, he explained, "The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference. Because of indifference, one dies before one actually dies." Whatever the larger love is, one finger pointing toward it suggests that it is the opposite of indifference. Being a professional historian, of course, my inclination is also to look to our religious forebears, the Unitarians and the Universalists, to see how they understood the larger love and the various human attempts to embody it in our lives. Both traditions from our early history, being solidly Christian, assumed that humanity's ability to love and our attraction to love would have been a reflection of God's loving nature. Now, there are certainly Unitarian Universalists today who embrace this idea that God is simply love. But I'm also aware that this explanation probably confuses and frustrates as many people as it satisfies. When I'm speaking about the larger love, I'm definitely not thinking of a heavenly father or a deity that chooses sides in wartime or sports matches or elections, or even a conscious being at all. Because God language already has so much baggage that many of us stumble over it, I merely want to offer it as one more finger pointing toward the moon, one more dimension that might help us get a better sense of the whole picture of the larger love. I find that one of our modern prophets, Martin Luther King, expressed a number of insights that are very compatible with the idea of a larger love. King recognized that we have substituted an I-it relationship for the more reverent I-thou relationship. A watering down of reverence that describes all other lives as things, as objects that satisfy or dissatisfy us. And he warned that this near enemy destroys community and makes real relationship impossible. He elaborated, When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I am speaking of that force which all the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. King's collection of sermons, Strength to Love, was an exploration and celebration of love as a spiritual force, akin to a natural force like gravity that unites and binds all life. Today, it's no surprise that so many Unitarian Universalists are drawn to the poetry of Mary Oliver, who sees in the web of natural life the fingers pointing us toward the larger love. In her beloved poem, Wild Geese, she insists